The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the ShopTapes.com studios.
It's a fantastic Friday here on Sports360AZ.com, also on AZ Central Sports and White Mountain Radio. My name is Jared Cohen. I'm joined today by Mark McClune, CBS 5 Sports. We're filling in for Brad Sesmatt today on what should be a fun-filled couple hours to take you into your weekend. Mark, it's been a few months since we've been able to do this. It's great to have you back on the show.
I keep seeing you down below in different stadiums walking around with a camera. We haven't actually had a chance to chat. So why not do it live on the radio with our flip-flops on?
Let's
like this flip-flop
up.
Friday that you guys have going on here.
It's a nice little casual thing that the man in charge, Eric Sorensen, likes to roll with us every so often. Let's catch up by talking about today's top stories, which is brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino, located outside the beautiful White Mountains, just outside of Pine Top in eastern Arizona. Head up now to enjoy our beautiful spring weather and catch up on the Final Four this weekend as well. That's the Honda Resort and Casino, a proud sponsor of what we do here at Sports360AZ.com. We'll get into the Final Four just a little bit. That starts tomorrow, but first, let's talk about the Diamondbacks. Boy, it was a bee-filled venture yesterday as the Diamondbacks took the field for the fourth game in their four-game set, and this is what happens. Yep. AJ Pollock ran right into the party. That was the
There was a party out there. Right center field
by the Fries sign.
Yeah, yeah. That was
a party going on.
It took me a little. I thought this was like a kid's song or something. I listen to a lot of kids' song, chasing them around all the time.
Sure.
But yeah, that's what do they play inside the ballpark?
They played this one. They played Let It Be, and they played Don't Worry, Be Happy.
There you go.
We thought this was the best for a Friday morning tune to get you going for the day.
Yeah, no, certainly. It was good. They had an exterminator in the ballpark. They had a sign, and the guy came over and started spraying them down. But
if you missed it, AJ Pollock on the first play of the game, there's bees in one portion of that entire outfield, the whole outfield. And Angel Pagan, who would end up being a bee in the side of the Diamondbacks, hits it right to that one spot. AJ Pollock catches it, runs back almost halfway to the infield, and they call the game to get the exterminator out there, and the rest is history.
Of course, the very first ball is hit right into the bees.
Right,
all the
there.
Places a ball could be hit.
Third pitch of the game.
And Pollock, I mean, some grace under pressure there. He went right into the bees.
Yeah, I got a lot of respect for him.
Sure.
For that.
Sure.
That was
definitely
a tough one.
It's been that kind of week for AJ Pollock as he took the collar on opening night and came back with three hits and got a lot of respect for that guy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, a guy that also stepped up big this series on the opposite side of things. We mentioned Angel Pagan. He had the big hit yesterday that went swimming, and it wasn't a Giant this time, falling into the pool.
So now Pagan to try to put the Giants ahead, and he swings, and he hits a high drive into deep right center field, out toward the resort, on its way. Adios, Pelota! That one is on vacation. A three-run big fly by Pagan.
The great John Miller.
Out towards the resort. I like that.
Yeah, as the Diamondbacks fall yesterday 8-5, losing 3-4 from the Giants and falling 1-5 to start the year. They are already 3.5 games out of first, and we haven't even played a full week of baseball yet, Mark.
Right, right. Well, I mean, you look at the schedule in April, and it's a gauntlet. I think there's 20 games against the NL West, so we might be by June. Turning to maybe arena football and Mercury basketball. This doesn't look good. The bullpen, here we go again. I think I tweeted on the home opener. I've seen this game before. A lot of things starting to rear their head. But, you know, the one thing I'm hanging on to, because I don't want to sit through a hot summer and have a baseball team that's out of it, is they're actually scoring some runs.
They are.
And I think that there are some pieces here, even though you lost Patrick Corbin, even though you lost David Hernandez, that they can be in every game, and they just have to kind of adopt that mantra of their manager to keep pushing forward. Who knows? I mean, they could rip off four or five straight wins, but it is kind of exhausting to watch right now because you're like, what's gonna happen next?
It's true. That's Mark McClune, CBS 5 Sports. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmatt today, and you're right. They were in every game in the series because of their hitting. The problem was the bullpen yet again, and Will Harris, right, who was a guy that came in and did a great job his first outing, comes back yesterday and just gets blown up in the eighth inning, gives up five runs. Here's what he had to say about what happened in the top of the eighth against the Giants.
No. It was where I wanted to throw it. Thought I made some good pitches during the inning. You know, big league hitters they can hit good pitches sometimes, and that kind of was the case today.
Now, Mark, I want you to make note of he said that was right where I wanted to throw it. Let's now ask the same question to Kirk Gibson about that pitch to Angel Pagan.
We decided to go around Posey. I mean, didn't make a good pitch to Morse, although he hit a ground ball. And then the one to Pagan was, you know, it's a killer. It's just something down over the middle of the plate, didn't do a lot. And he's been a tough guy. He's made himself a good player.
So, ipso facto, yeah, they are not on the same page.
No, not on the same page. He meant to throw it down over the plate. I mean, that's basically what he's saying. And a lot of times pitchers won't tell you the whole story because they don't want to give away their whole game plan. But somebody's not talking to the other person, and there's a definite disagreement. And I would imagine there'll be a conversation today in the clubhouse about that because that's not the tribe. The tribe all talks together and moves with one voice and is always on the same page, and that's how they want to do things. And that's clearly a break in the message there.
Absolutely. One guy that did communicate well, especially with his manager on the mound during the game after just 4 1/3 inning, was Bronson Arroyo. He was pulled early. Kirk Gibson said after the game that he went up to him and asked him, "Be honest, how are you doing?" And they had an honest conversation. And they, Bronson Arroyo talked about it a little bit yesterday and what his first outing was like as a Diamondback after the game.
You know, a good lineup is going to foul pitches off. They're going to try to make you work. That's what it is. You know, you're trying to get quick outs, but it doesn't always happen. You know, the flow of every game can be just so different. Sometimes it's so easy and sometimes it's such a grind. And today, you know, regardless of the score, it was a battle for me.
Yeah, the Giants really put a tough lineup out there against him. They put basically all the lefties that they had without Buster Posey, and it was a grind for him. But talk about what did you like out of Bronson? What were you unsure about in his first start with the Diamondbacks? I know it's an uphill climb for him to get back in shape because he missed a lot of spring training.
Yeah, with the back, and you thought maybe that's why they pulled him. That's kind of what I was thinking at the time. But, I mean, this is a guy that's supposed to eat up innings. He's supposed to work late in the games. He's supposed to go out there and do his job. I don't know that I didn't like that he didn't make it out of the fifth inning yesterday. He's supposed to be durable. I mean, I know he's 37 years old, 36, 37 years
37,
old.
37, yeah.
But that's just another one of the things, just disappointments first week of the season where you just need somebody, anybody to come in here and create a little bit of a spark. And I mean, I feel like other than A.J. Pollock bouncing back, Addison Reed bouncing back from tough home openers, it's just been a lot of that. And it's kind of like, well, it might be a long summer around here unless somebody really gets it going and kind of grabs the tribe by the horns here and says, "Boys, this is where we're going, and I'm leading you." And I haven't seen any of that yet.
And you, in a roundabout way, summed up my biggest fear with this team this year, and that's, where is there going to be a guy after the team is dealing with a little bit of a lull, a little bit of a losing streak, coming off a tough loss, who is going to be the starting pitcher that steps up and says, "Don't worry, guys, I'll be able to go out there and throw 6-7 strong,
right,
shutout to 2-run baseball to get us back in the swing of things." Because I don't see one pitcher in this starting rotation that you could rely upon 100% to do that. Patrick Corbin was that guy during the dog days of summer last year. Ian Kennedy was that guy prior to then. Is it going to be Archie Bradley? I mean, maybe once the dog days of summer comes around, though, that this team is out of the picture, you know?
Right.
So, that's the biggest fear that I have is, do you rely on now on a Brandon McCarthy to in Coors Field to get you back on track?
I mean,
that's a scary thought.
I'm kind of having a really tough time shaking the thought that they're snake bit, because I thought Brandon McCarthy was awesome in the home opener and he gets charged with 5 earned runs. You know, I think Aaron Hill has been swinging the bat great, and it hasn't been rewarded for it. Same with Goldschmidt. Those two guys have got to be sitting there saying, not what else do I have to do, but it's one thing every night. It's like whatever can go wrong will go wrong so far for this team, and it's tiring. It's already tiring, and we're a week into the season.
One more thing about this team that I'd love your thoughts on. One of the things that was kind of bothering me a little bit after their Diamondbacks win, actually, the only win of the series, was right before they won, Chris Owings dropped a short outfield pop-up.
Another thing, okay, like, how does that happen? Like,
And it wasn't the only blunder that he made, but he also almost hit 500 so far through two series.
Yeah.
So I'm of the opinion of, Let him take his lumps a little bit. It's early in the season. He'll get his feet under him. Stop jumping ship on a guy and say, we want Didi. When you look at the other side of the ball and this guy's hitting almost 500 and this team's hitting is what's going to make them successful. Are you of the opinion of they have enough hitters around them that maybe they should have gone with a guy like Didi to maybe have that one spot and make up for it on defense? Or do you like what you've seen out of Chris Owings and you're like, you know what, I'd like to – you know, let him take his lumps a little bit and ride this out.
Yeah, I think take his lumps and ride it out. What we saw out of Gregorius last year was he jumped on the scene, burst on the scene in New York City, and then after that, you really got nothing. Now, I do like a guy that can kind of take the big stage and likes the big stage, and I think you want a guy like that in your lineup, but just over he just wore down, and I don't know if it's part of the pressure that they put on him over there to kind of constantly be applying pressure, so in a pressure situation, you don't notice the pressure. But I feel like, yeah, get his bat in the lineup. And, you know, the old adage, if you can hit, you can play. And Didi Gregorius wasn't hitting last year. Mm-hmm. And a great glove. So if Owings gives up outs, if it's the old Mark Reynolds thing where he creates runs but he gives up outs, it all evens out, then that's probably not worth it. Then you probably need Gregorius's glove up here to take, you know, to create some outs. But as of right now, I think you kind of know what you have in Gregorius, and until he starts hitting the ball better, he's probably going to be stuck down at Reno.
That's Mark McLoon, CBS 5 Sports. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today on Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports, and White Mountain Radio. We're going to switch gears to football. Coming up next, Mike Sando, ESPN.com NFL Insider, joins us. Pete Carroll got an extension. The draft coming up quickly. We're going to get into all of that with Mike Sando after the break. Don't go away. Sports360AZ.com, Jared Cohen and Mark McLoon filling in for Brad Sesmat today. Going to talk a little NFL here also on AZ Central Sports and White Mountain Radio. And we're joined by Mike Sando, NFL columnist for ESPN Insider. And Mike, we got a lot of big things have happened here of late, but the biggest and most notable one, Pete Carroll, Super Bowl champion coach, lands an extension today. What's the vibe out there in Seattle after this news has come down?
Well, I think it's telling there that, you know, we haven't heard much about this at all. You know, there's the big story this offseason has been, you know, whether Jim Harbaugh is going to get a new deal. He has 2 years left. And here Pete Carroll was down to the final year, and it was just a given that he would do a new deal. And I think, you know, from where that organization was, you know, 6-7 years ago when there was some, you know, the front office and the coach weren't on the same page, that's a pretty good sign. And, you know, obviously winning solves everything, but I think winning is also a product of you know, the type of relationships that the head coach and GM have here, that they appear to have in Arizona, and that they generally have to have to you know, succeed over time.
Mike Sando, NFL columnist for ESPN Insider, joining us here on Sports 360 AZ. And Mike, big news of the day, other than Pete Carroll getting the extension, Chris Johnson appears to be released, and he'll be free there in Tennessee. Where could you see him landing? I know it's early, but a very talented running back.
Well, I think a couple of teams that should at least, you know, consider it. I could see St. Louis. You know, Jeff Fisher's there, obviously was with Chris Johnson, knows him, and they have a good young running back in Zach Stacy. You know, Daryl Richardson's another young back, but I think, you know, they could consider one going into the draft. There's been some talk of the Jets, who haven't been a big spending team for the most part in free agency, neither have the Rams. So, you know, sometimes what happens when you're an accomplished player like Chris Johnson, you know, you hit the market, and it's a little sobering. You have to realize that, you know, everyone's not clamoring to pay you what you've been making before. And so if he needs some time to realize that, sometimes you don't see a deal get done. If he's realistic and knows the situation, maybe you see something happen a little bit quicker.
Just another NFC West team involved in a big-name player. We stressed everyone out with Jared Allen as well and DeSean Jackson, even though they didn't end up signing. Now you're saying Chris Johnson could end up with the Rams. That next to Tavon Austin, that could be some speed out there, couldn't it?
Yeah, you know, it could, but I think also, you know, there's a reason the Titans would be getting rid of him too, you know. And,
sure.
And, you know, you have a guy who's declined a little bit, didn't have a great year last year. He's 28 years old, and you figure, you know, the most of his best big plays are behind him. I did look last night. I was just looking since 2008, you know, who in the league has the most runs of 30-plus yards, and it was number one, Adrian Peterson, no surprise. But Chris Johnson was next on that list. He has been an explosive player, and I think if he can adjust his role and, you know, not He's not going to probably be going to a team that's going to give him, you know, 300 carries. Maybe he could still be that type of back who hits you for a home run every once in a while.
Mike Sando joining Mark McClune and Jared Cohen on Sports 360 AZ. Let's switch gears over to the Cardinals. Mike, we're curious your thoughts on the moves the Cardinals have made this offseason from a free agency standpoint. They lose Carlos Dansby, but they add Antonio Cromartie and Ted Ginn. What are your thoughts on the moves that they've been able to make thus far?
Well, I like the fact that they were aggressive in getting the left tackle early, because that's just been a huge problem for them, and that's probably the one position where they did need to go out and spend some money and fix it, and not going to the draft, you know, picking 20th, hoping you're going to find your left tackle. It's just not, that's not a good feeling going on draft day. It's not like they're picking third and feel like, okay, they can get Greg Robinson or somebody. So I thought that was a really nice move early. It's a bonus to get a guy who's younger. Now, he did have an injury, but, you know, there's no one perfect in free agency. So you're at least getting a young guy who's played well recently, who wants to come to your team, who knows your quarterback. I liked that move. Did not like losing Carlos Dansby, but I think in the bigger picture, that's why you drafted Kevin Minter. It's, you know, a lot of money that Cleveland paid, and it's not great money to spend on a 32-year-old player. So I think you'd almost say that departure is a positive example of the discipline of a front office. You know, it's not like they have been unwilling to spend money. You know, it wasn't like they were being cheap and not keeping them. I think that was a major decision. You swallow hard because you lose a good player, but remember, he was kind of found money last year. He really came in and helped them, and now if you build your team right, you have a younger guy come in, and, you know, maybe he's not as good right away, but he grows into it.
And we've heard Steve Keim and Bruce Arians say going forward in the draft, they've addressed most of their needs in free agency so they can draft the best available athlete. Just as far as reviews of Steve Keim, the time that he's been in the GM chair and what you expect going forward, he's kind of a guy that's able to find a pretty good bargain and it really kind of getting the reputation of having an eye for talent, isn't he?
Yeah. You know what's really struck me about Steve, he's been really methodical and measured, and I think we didn't know what type of GM he would be. You know, when you talk to Steve, he's got a big personality. He's a larger than life figure. You know, he played offensive line. He seems like a guy you'd like to go have a beer with. And, you know, I didn't know how does that translate to the day-to-day, you know, grind of personnel and a GM job and having to make the unemotional, detached decisions and sticking with values on players. And I think he's exceeded expectations on that front. You know, he really has been not just a good personnel guy, but a good GM. And I think there's a big difference between the two. Not every good personnel guy makes a good GM, because you have to make decisions sometimes that are longer term. I think, man, through a couple seasons of doing this, I think he's really distinguished himself as one of the pleasant stories, in personnel in the league.
Quick, Mike, before we let you go, and we appreciate you joining us this morning, we've talked about the fact that they've addressed needs with free agency. So what do you see with them having with the NFL draft coming up here soon? What positions do you see them looking to fill, and what kind of moves do you anticipate them making?
Yeah, I think they've done a nice job. You know, I thought speed receiver was something that they got Ted Ginn, so maybe there's less pressure to do that. But I'd still like to, you know, see Bruce Arians get another tool. I like the John Carlson pickup. You know, I wonder what the future holds at that position for Rob Hausser. But, you know, maybe you're in that position at 20 where it's a luxury, but you get a tight end that he really loves. Or, you know what, maybe you're sitting there and Derek Carr's available and you think, you know what, let's add a quarterback, a big arm quarterback. You know, it's a sort of a surprise move, because you're pricking that 20 spot where you can't go into the draft and know who you're going to get, but you're in position also where, hey, what position falls to you? Because you're not desperate. You know, sure, you could probably say it'd be nice if they got a safety, or, you know, there'd be some sort of, you know, perfect need move. But I just like being in a position going to the draft where you can draft longer term or take somebody who's the best player at that position. It just happens to have fallen there. So I'm excited to see what they do.
Thanks, Mike. We really appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
That's Mike Sando, NFL columnist for ESPN Insider, joining Jared Cohen and Mark McClune here on Sports 360, AZ.com, AZ Central Sports, and White Mountain Radio. And he's throwing out the David Carr. Now, that's something that's very interesting. Did you watch his John Gruden quarterback camp, the David Carr one?
You know, I have them all DVR'd at home. I haven't even watched Johnny Football's yet. I've just seen little snippets.
His is the only his, and I watched a little bit of David Carr's. I haven't seen either of them in full because, like you, I have kids that like to take over the television at home, and then a wife that likes to put in her two cents as well. So, but I've watched snippets of both of them, and Gruden loved Carr. He loved him, and I just he's got that. Excuse me, Derek Carr. What do I keep saying? David Carr?
Well, David Carr, of course, the number one pick, went to Houston back in 2001. And I mean, I watched his career being from Houston and saw him get his brains beat in behind a bad offensive line. And maybe that's running me off here. But he's got the big arm. Doesn't Bortles have the big arm too?
Well, yeah. Well, I'd love Bortles, but I don't think he's going to be there.
At 20, definitely.
If Bortles is there at 20, that is the easiest decision you've ever had to make in your life if you're Steve Keim and Bruce Arians.
Sure.
You were there at the Fiesta Bowl, right?
Yeah.
I loved what I saw. Everyone was saying that he's a guy to watch out for the NFL draft. You know, maybe he's a guy that the Cardinals look at. His stock rose in that game. He was great. He could run the football, made all the throws. Had great command of the offense. I'm a fan of his. I think he's the best out of this group.
This is really tough for me to say this, but I think there's one quarterback in the draft that I would go after, and it's Johnny Football. I think all the other guys, they're all sort of I'm a big fan
and
of
this
special
is coming from
talent.
A Longhorn.
This is coming from a Longhorn. This is coming from
talking about an Aggie.
And I know everybody says, "Oh, all the off the field stuff." That guy has special talent. And if the Houston Texans do not draft Johnny Football number one, they're crazy. I know Jadeveon Clowney is a Greek god who was drawn, but I feel like that guy is going to disappear in the playoffs. And Johnny Football is, whoever gets him is if they can block, they can get the offensive line to block for him. He's going to be a difference maker. I feel like Bortles. I feel like Carr. Yeah, I think they'll be good NFL quarterbacks.
Very interesting.
But that's just that. I think that's where the league's going, man.
It's very interesting. It's very interesting. Let's we neglected our favorite guy in the world, Eric Sorensen, in the first segment when we were talking about all the bees and
he's
everything.
He's used to getting neglected, right?
It happens quite a bit.
We apologize for that.
No, no need to apologize.
We got to get to the Facebook question of the day.
In a minute, I'll be the one apologizing to you guys when you hear this Facebook question. So yesterday at Chase Field, scene was certainly bee-leaving.
That's horrible.
I know.
I
told
you.
Cut my mic.
Had you
that's
on
worse
mute.
Than Addison
cut
Reed's
my
pitch on
mic.
Night. Yeah.
Giants-Dimebacks game was stopped in the first inning. When A.J. Pollock was nearly attacked on the first out of the game as he ventured into right center field to catch a long fly ball. So we ask you today, what is the weirdest thing you've seen happen at a sporting event? You don't even have to be there. It's just, what's the weirdest thing you've seen happen? I'll start this.
Go for it.
Sorry, I'm going to interrupt you again, Jared. I'm good at that. Number one. It's got to be Randy Johnson killing the pigeon in Tucson, right? I mean, come on. That's legendary.
That was weird.
Second one is a little bit more obscure, but back in about 2009, a kangaroo got loose on a racetrack in Australia during a race. Those are the two.
What kind of race?
An auto race. Not a NASCAR, but what's the other?
Formula One.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
Formula One, where they make the real quick turns and go in and out of the brakes. Pretty bizarre. I mean, a kangaroo on a racetrack.
I feel like that wouldn't be that strange for Australia. That wasn't Australia, right? That'd
it
be
is.
Very strange if it was like in Montreal or something. But yeah,
the kangaroo.
Yeah.
Well, are they wild dogs out there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like
all right.
I don't know. Squirrel.
I also saw Ralphie the Buffalo get loose once during a Colorado game and nearly. I mean, they corralled the buffalo, but he was, like, running up and down the sidelines, and all the little chaser people in their khaki pants were running after
and
him.
And their hats flying everywhere.
Correct.
Yeah,
I've been to a game in Boulder, and that could be really scary.
We know who's winning that battle. I'll take the buffalo every day.
Every day. Every but day anyway, you can jump over to facebook.com/sports360az and like our page. Any other ones?
Yeah, I'll throw one out there. I'll definitely throw one out there. One that U of A fans won't like very much. It was a game that I was present for. You know, we're talking about games that we may have seen. This one I was actually at when Jeremiah Mazzoli brought the Oregon Ducks back from
behind.
Whatever
happened to Jeremiah Mazzoli?
It's a name out of the past. And the U of A student section and even other fans, you can't just put it all in the Zona Zoo. They rushed the field before the game was over. Sure enough, it goes into overtime, and then they lose in overtime. The fans rush for the field. It's almost as bad, if not worse, than the Stanford Cal, the band is
of
on
course.
The field.
That's a good one.
That's the other one that I thought of, and then the third one, another game I was present at, which was not a weird moment because it's happened so many different times, but the fact that I was there, it was weird, was when Shaq brought the hoop down on top of
Mark West.
At the time, America West Arena, I was a youngin' present at that game, and there was like a 45-minute delay? That was a weird moment in sports.
They couldn't just roll another hoop in from the back? They've got one back there. I've seen it.
Now they do.
Yeah.
I think that changed their...
The approach. I can tell you when Shaq came to the Suns, one of the it was kind of funny, comical at the time, doing sidelines over there, when he would jump in the stands.
Yeah.
And just go all in and hit some old lady and knock over her wine and you go over and interview him.
Bodies flying everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. That was one of my favorite moments. I kind of looked forward to that, and there'd be nights where I'd be sitting there saying, I don't really have a sideline hit. I really hope Shaq jumps in the stands and knocks someone over. But probably my favorite Keystone Cops, Cape, you know, just one of those crazy moments was Ruben Rivera against the Diamondbacks in 2003. And if you haven't seen it, go to YouTube. John Miller, the great John Miller, we heard him coming on the radio this morning, at the beginning of the show announcing the game yesterday. But he said, and that might be the worst display of base running in the history of the game. Ruben Rivera missed second base. And then a bad throw at third, so he went home, and he was a dead duck by 5 feet. And this is the guy that later stole Derek Jeter's glove, so he's not that bright. But clearly had not worked on going second, third, to home, and it's hysterical.
That's Mark McClune, CBS 5 Sports. I'm Jared Cohen, Sports 360 AZ. Go to our Facebook question of the day and weigh in on this great question by Eric Sorensen. We're also on AZ Central Sports.
Really not a good question.
And White so, yeah. Mountain Radio. Bees. We're going to talk a little Suns and NBA basketball after this, so don't go anywhere.
React and interact to our Facebook question of the day. Like our page at facebook.com/sports360AZ.
Jared Cohen and Mark McClune filling in for Brad Sesmat today. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports, and White Mountain Radio. The one thing that we haven't gotten into yet today, we've talked about weird moments in sports and bees and Diamondbacks and some Cardinals football. Haven't talked to any Suns basketball yet. Still a tough one to swallow from the other night as they dropped a 17-point lead to the Clippers.
And watching Matt Barnes, the former Sun, Jared Dudley, the former Sun, and Hedo Turkoglu, the former Sun, lead the comeback.
Former Sun.
I didn't even think about I'm sick, and I want them to be in the playoffs so bad, because if not, then they should have just tanked the season. If they do not make the playoffs, this will be demoralizing, disappointing, and who are you going to draft at 13? Yeah. You know,
it was pretty tough. And what made things that much more difficult. As Eric, we're going to jump to number 8 here. The things that much more difficult is the Suns didn't take care of business against the Clippers, but the Mavericks did last night.
Right rolls across the way to Dirk again, open for three, and a knockdown again for three for Dirk. And he certainly is making up for lost time after not making anything in the fourth quarter against the Clippers in the last two games. He's knocked down three shots, including a pair of threes in the fourth.
That's Dirk Nowitzki on Mavs radio, knocking down the big three, and the Mavericks took care of business. Now have a half-game lead on the Suns, and the Suns now are no longer in any sort of tie. They don't have the tiebreaker with the Grizzlies, so they are, in fact, in ninth on the outside looking in as they go to Portland this evening. A team that's good, but the Suns have played against very, very well this season, but still... Damian Lillard has become one of my favorite players in basketball. He is so much fun to watch. That team is playing well. Gosh, I don't want to sound like a broken record. We went up and down the schedule yesterday when I filled in for Brad about what the Suns have left remaining. They got to pull something out of their backsides. That's really what they got to do, and they cannot. They cannot have lulls in the middle of games. They got to put together a full 48 minutes, and they have to do it in a hurry.
I feel like that it's not going to happen. Simply put, I mean, they go to Portland, they have Oklahoma City, they're at Dallas next week. They're the
San Antonio.
Yeah, this is going to be the ultimate rabbit out of a hat trick, and they're just not good enough, and they're very max effort. And when Gerald Green gets to shooting the ball well, it keeps them in games, but it's just not. they need another piece. And they were able to stay. I mean, it was so much fun to watch earlier in the year because they of the hustle and the drive and the fact that they would wear you down. But now every team, and I don't really think this is an indictment of the NBA. Everybody says they play no defense and no one cares for the playoffs. I just think as you get further along in the season, your intensity level goes up. And the Suns had that intensity level early because they were a bunch of guys trying to prove themselves. Mm-hmm. Now everybody's trying to prove themselves. And Dirk Nowitzki says, I think I want to get back to the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to put a little extra time in. I think I'm going to crank up my focus. I'm not going to get worn down by the road. And I think in the end, Suns are on the outside looking in, and it's frustrating as someone who watches them all the time and wants them to be in the playoffs.
Sure. And you talk about it being demoralizing if they don't win the playoffs. It brings up a conversation that Eric and I had yesterday. It happens to be his Facebook question of the day from yesterday that you could still weigh in on sports on facebook.com/sports360.
That's a good question. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, the question was, is the season still a success if they don't make the playoffs?
I don't think so.
So you disagree with Eric and I?
Really?
Now, I'm of the opinion, and Eric and I were kind of in the same boat here, and Eric wrote about it on sports360az.com, saying basically don't be disappointed if the Suns didn't make the playoffs, and here is why, okay? I'm always of the opinion either you win and you put yourself in position to win, or it's a failure. That's normally where I'm at. But the Suns were so in such bad shape there for 2 years where the season would end and you would sit there and you'd be like, where in the world is this team even going? Like, there is not even a piece on this team that points towards any sort of positive direction. I look at this team now and there are so many pieces and so many players that have changed my opinion about them that I look at the future, which Ignite the Future is what this year was, whether it's in the playoffs or not. That's what the Suns talked about. Ignite the future, ignite what's ahead. The Suns have done that. Whether or not they make the playoffs, obviously I'd like to see them make the playoffs. Obviously Phoenix fans and you would like to see them make the playoffs as well. NBA basketball in the playoffs is a lot of fun. And if you're going to be in that ninth spot in the Western
That's
Conference.
That's called no man's land.
It is, especially if you're looking for draft picks. But the Suns have multiple draft picks. They can pair multiple draft picks to move up in the draft, maybe to snag a high pick away from a team that's looking to add multiple assets, which there are teams like that out there.
Right.
They're in good position. If they don't make the playoffs, I don't think it's the end of the world. Do I want them to make the playoffs? Of course I do. Will I be a little disappointed if they don't? Of course I would, because they really built me up to say, you know what, this team is pretty special. I'd like to see what they can do in a five and then seven game series if they make it. But if they don't, I'm not going to be bent out of shape about it. Eric Sorensen felt the same way.
One of the things that I in looking back on it, that really struck my attention, the Suns are 44-31. Think about that. They're 13 games over 500. Last year, this team won a grand total of 3 games in the month of March. This year, they won 10 games in the month of March. And there is improvement. Yeah. And let's, you know, honestly, McClune, are the Suns going to win the championship? Let's just call it the way it is. No. Will they maybe win a game or two if they're the 8 going up against the Spurs, who are easily the 1? Or OKC or whoever it is, if they're a 7? They might win a game or two. The season might extend another week. But in the grand scheme of things, I mean, a year ago, Lindsey Hunter was the head coach. Let that settle in for
10 years ago. Yeah. Yep. Wow. Well, okay. So you've talked me into it. But
okay.
Here's my one the caveat here. All right. I don't think that you're going to get to an NBA title any faster in this year's draft. I think you're going to bring in some nice pieces, but you already have some nice pieces, and then you're going to have to take playing time away from everybody.
It's always a crapshoot, too. The draft is always a crapshoot.
So I think they are set up to bring in the next Charles Barkley. I think that they are set up to bring in Kevin Love. I think that is how you get there. I don't think 4 draft picks, and they just got Washington's draft pick, so now you have another one in the teens, and I mean, that's fine. Maybe Frank Kaminsky will be there. Big Frank Kaminsky fan after last week with Wisconsin. But I don't think you're beating the Spurs anytime soon with draft picks coming in next year. I don't think that guy's there for a couple years.
Well, speaking of the Spurs, one thing that I think might happen is if they win the NBA title this year, which I boldly said on the show yesterday that I think they're going to. I think the Spurs are going to win the NBA Finals this year. I think they're going to – it's not the Heat, not the Pacers, not the Thunder. I think it's the Spurs. I think they're a team that knows that this is it. This is their last shot. They had the Heat last year. They know how to beat them. I think that they're going to do it. But they have to get past the Thunder first, and that was part of the problem. Last night, the Spurs and Thunder squared off, and Kevin Durant did his thing.
Durant 40 feet from the basket. Shot clock to 7. Working the left-hand bounce. Stutter steps. Crosses over. Twice. Lost it. Got it back. Burrows down the lane. Floats a 5. Footer at the shot clock buzzer and gets it. 24 for Durant.
He's a stud. He's a
stud.
So
you say Spurs. I mean, it's easy for me to sit here and say Oklahoma City Thunder, but I feel like I can make the same argument about just Kevin Durant. Because
yeah.
He has had to live with losing to the Heat for 2 years now, and his partner in crime, Westbrook, goes down last year, and he's back. I really can't wait for a Spurs-Thunder seven-game series.
Be a really good one. You know what they did, though, last night, though? The Spurs dropped their first game in 19 tries, and Greg Popovich was classic Popovich last night. You got to hear the soundbite.
We never thought about the streak in the first place. To us, it's just another game. And we just watched film about turnovers and playing in a crowd and that kind of thing. So we learn from every game, whether we win it or lose it. But it's got nothing to do with a streak.
You know, I rolled my eyes at the beginning, but I kind of think that he never even thought about it because he has no fun unless, you know, he's winning the title.
Yeah.
But I don't. I mean, that's just vintage Pop. Would you want him to come out and be emotional about the streak?
No. I mean, but it's a question you have to ask. I just think it's perfect. I thought it was a perfect soundbite.
He's not happy unless he's miserable. Last year in the finals, he was mic'd up talking to his team in a timeout, and he's just like, "Guys, it's supposed to be hard. That's why you're here." And I just that kind of crystallized Greg Popovich.
Yeah,
I mean, it's he likes the process. He likes the grind. He doesn't even he'll enjoy winning for a minute, and then he's on to building the game plan for the next game.
Nice.
He might not even enjoy it if, as predicted, the Spurs win the title this year.
He might crack a smile. Or so. But anyways, that's Mark McLoon. I'm Jared Cohen. Filling in for Brad Sesmat today. Going to do our weekly segment with Bill Gutekunst. Goody at the movies. Take a little break from sports. That's coming up on Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports, and White Mountain Radio.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
And it's time we do this every week. We catch up with Bill Gutekunst, AZ Central and Gannett movie media critic. And before we get into something, there's something that a big news that came down just the other day. And it's really only have 1 year left to take this in. Let's check this out.
Rejected prom theme. Here we go. These were considered and rejected.
These were
rejected prom
theme.
Well,
there was a red carpet. That would have been accepted.
That would have been accepted. These would be rejected.
Checked.
Number 10, Moon Over Abbottabad. Number 9, Prelude to VD. Number 8, Gingrich 2012. Number 7, Dave Letterman's Cavalcade of Fun. Number 6, Rhapsody in Orthodontic Headgear. Number 5, The Films of Rob Schneider. Number 4, number 4, writer at a bad prom. Whoa, what are the odds of that happening?
What are the odds?
Number 3, theme TBD. Number 2, Forever Busey. And the number 1 rejected prom themes, a minimum of time and effort. There you go.
With that, we bring in Bill Gutekunst. Bill, Jared Cohen, and Mark McLoon filling in for Brad. Your thoughts on David Letterman announcing his retirement in 2015?
I mean, I think on the one hand, you can't be that surprised. I mean, the guy's 67, and as he said last night, he's been doing it for more than half his life. So on that front, it's not surprising. But if you're like me and you're of an age that's like I am, where you grew, you know, I could grow up with him, but I started watching him in college with the NBC show, and it was so different than anything that we'd ever seen. I can't help but feel old, you know?
Well, Bill, my favorite top 10 he ever did was top 10 reasons why the New York Mets will be better this year with live New York Mets. He's just very, very creative in that regard, but it does seem like Jimmy Fallon has sort of, he kind of sees the handwriting on the wall there with Fallon taking over the Tonight Show. How much do you think Fallon's presence a couple channels away is leading to Dave's decision to walk away?
Well, I mean, it's good timing for Letterman to do it, but I think the guy does his own thing. He ever since Hugh Grant in 1994 went on Leno, the Tonight Show has always beaten, with very few exceptions, has always beaten Letterman in the ratings. It's not so much about that. It's just like you talk to these other guys. Like, I think that, like, the guy who's most like Letterman now is Jimmy Kimmel. Mm-hmm. And he's sort of changing things, too. He really gets social media. He gets viral videos, stuff like that. And I think that he, you know, those guys love Letterman. The thing about Letterman is late-night TV would not be the way it is right now if it wasn't for Letterman. That's how much he changed things. And how many people all throughout TV have ever really changed things? I mean, same thing in sports. I mean, how many people have genuinely changed games? You know, Wilt Chamberlain, they had to, you know, they made it, they had to make it so you couldn't dunk from the free throw line anymore. I mean, you know, and then Jabbar, they outlawed dunking in college for years, you know. But mostly, there are not a lot of people who genuinely change the way things work. And I think Letterman really was one of them.
You know, you talk about these the changes and how different it was when you first started watching him, Bill. Is there something like what? Is there a specific legacy that he'll leave behind? Anything that he did in particular that people will most remember him for that stand out to you?
I think it's a lot of it is just that smarky attitude. I mean, you know, you're sitting there and you're supposed to be studying, and it's, you know, and I'm from back east, and yeah, the show didn't even come on until 12:30, and you're sitting there, and all of a sudden here's a guy dropping objects off of a 9-story building just to see what they look like when they crash. All of a sudden, you know, we're doing stupid pet tricks. We're, you know, here's a guy in an Alka-Seltzer suit being dropped into a big vat of water. I mean, which he almost passed out, by the way, because it replaces the oxygen.
Oh,
but I mean, this, or the Velcro suit, that was great. And, you know, he launched him up against a Velcro wall. This is just stuff that it was silly, it was goofy, but it really, you know, it was something different than what my parents laughed at. And you know, look, Johnny Carson, great. And Letterman loves Johnny Carson and always talks about how he'll never be as good as Carson. But to me, Johnny Carson was my parents' night show host, you know? I mean, the late night host. Letterman finally gave us something.
Yeah,
and now, and again, you can't help but feel a little bit old when you see that going away.
It spawned a new. I remember the Velcro suits. You could go do that after Letterman had that on his on his show. But how about a favorite movie star interview that Dave Letterman ever did? Do you have a kind of one moment? And as a critic, did you kind of have to watch his show to actually do some work to hear what the stars had to say?
Well, anytime Bill Murray was on, it's worth watching. And I would guess Bill Murray would be his last guest because he was his first guest. But he was good. The ones that were, of course, that were good are the ones that went really weird. Like Farrah Fawcett did one that got really bizarre. I don't know if you remember the Madonna interview from the early 90s, but that, I mean, newspapers, there was no internet as such back then. Newspapers covered that as news. I mean, she just sort of took over the show and started smoking the cigars and stuff. And cussing like a sailor, you know, but that was the thing. I mean, it was, we were all much younger then.
There was no internet. I can't,
it's weird.
What was that like?
Well, I mean, that's how old we are all getting. But he, in some ways, anticipated some of the crazy internet stuff. Because, yeah, I mean, some of that stuff now would have been viral in a second. You know, that Alka-Seltzer suit? Come on. I mean,
yeah,
that
no question.
That's a million hits right away.
Absolutely. Bill Gutekunst joining Mark McClune and Jared Cohen here on the Brad Sesmatch Show, filling in for Brad. Let's switch gears a little bit, Bill. Let's get to the movies. You had the opportunity to see Captain America, I believe, right? What was your review of the next great, or hopefully trying to be great, superhero movie?
Yeah, it's really good. The Marvel guys seem to really have this down. The Avengers was great. The Iron Man movies, the first one is great. The second two are pretty good. I think the Hulk movies have been underrated. But the thing that's pretty cool about this one is they've shot all the superhero stuff. I mean, there's stuff blows up and they run around and chase people and shoot at them and stuff. But it sort of something to think about. I mean, it's got these issues in there of like the government spying on people and how far do you go to protect people and at what point are you no longer protecting them, but, you know, actually infringing on their freedom. And that sounds like a lot for a superhero movie. And they don't overdo it, don't get me wrong. But it's just kind of nice to see one that's not, you know, just people beating each other's heads against the wall and stuff. And I got to say that Chris Evans, who plays Captain America, mm-hmm. I would bet he has done more sit-ups in one day than I have in my entire life.
Do they test for HGH?
He's in a pretty. Yeah, why not? I mean, it's not like they test for it on movie set. that's probably the least of their worries in the movie set. But he's actually good. And Scarlett Johansson is a fairly attractive woman.
Fairly.
And she wears skin-tight black outfits.
All right, Mark and I are going.
Yep,
we're sold.
Right after the show.
But she's pretty actually, and they get along with it. Their banter is really cool. And she's, in addition, yes, she's really good looking, but she's a really good actress and as well. And so, you know, you kind of get the two-for-one thing there.
Well,
now, I liked it. I think if you, as superhero movies go, you can do a lot worse.
Well, certainly with an action movie, you're probably going to have a number of memorable scenes. And kind of the way I gauge a good movie scene is back when I was able to go out a night before kids. You go to places, establishments, go have a libation or two. And sometimes the music would stop and a movie scene would come on and the entire bar would sit there and watch the movie scene. And then when it was over, you'd go back and continue your conversation. But there's some classic, movie scenes that we all knew and you kind of know the lines and everything like that. You recently wrote a column, The Coolest Movie Scene Ever. What conclusion did you come to with the coolest movie scene ever?
Well, this will make me sound like a pointy-headed critic, but there's a scene in a movie called Band Apart, which is a French film, and Quentin Tarantino actually named his production company A Band Apart after this movie. And it's this French gangster movie, but there's two guys and this girl, and she is so beautiful, and she puts on a little hat, and they do this. They go up to a jukebox and they do this little dance scene, just sort of out of the blue. And it's great. And then I saw another movie a couple of weeks ago where they sort of did it as an homage to that. But I'm like anybody. I think that's the coolest scene. But it's probably not the one I've seen. The one I've probably seen the most is like Bill Murray and Caddyshack or something like that. Cinderella Story or some version of Animal House or a Spinal Tap.
Yeah, when it's over, was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Maybe, probably most seen movie scene.
You know, the one that gets me every time is the guy playing the guitar on the stairs, and it's Stephen Bishop, by the way, who had a hit with On and On way back when, and Belushi walks up to him, grabs his guitar,
smashes
it, and that's kind of funny, but what makes it hilarious is he hands it back to him, he looks at him, he shrugs, he says, sorry.
Classic. That's one of my favorite. It's definitely one of my favorite parts of that movie too. Bill, thank you so much for your time as always. We appreciate it. And Mark and I, for sure, based on your talks to Captain America, are gonna have to go check that
right
out
after the show.
You
get
should.
Your popcorn
right.
ready.
It's to check
have
out
fun.
His abs. That's why we want to see it.
That's it.
I'm going
it'll
for Scarlett
have,
Johansson.
It'll shame you.
Thanks so much, Bill. We'll catch up with
good
you
stuff.
Soon. Bill Gutekunst, Stacey Central and Gannett movie and media critic. Sports 360, AZ.com, AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio. That's Mark McClune, CBS 5 Sports. We always have a lot of fun when we do this. Great stuff. My name is Jared Cohen, reporter for Sports 360, AZ.com. We've got all sorts of good stuff on our site, including the most recent column from Eric Sorensen. Don't be disappointed if the Suns don't make the playoffs. It's a good read. Make sure you check that out. And I did a little piece on Daniel Hudson. I got to talk with him for about 10 minutes on opening day.
Wouldn't it be nice to get him back?
It sure would. It sure would. They could use a starter. They got Randall Delgado going today. So that's it. That's Mark McClune. I'm Jared Cohen. Sports360AZ.com.